Okay, well, I'll tell you what I was, a little bit of what I gave over Shabbos, so why not? So Zev knows, last year, I had a bit of fun. I was writing a series for the VBM on, that's the virtual Beit Midrash, on Halacha and the Age of Social Media.
Did you finish it?
I did finish it. 39 units.
Wow.
Yeah,
oh.
The only question is whether I turn it into a book, because it would be like a 450-page book if I actually get around to it.
Wow. Crazy.
It was like 2,500 to 3,500 words a week, so like...
Wow.
It's long. Anyways, so I figured some Elul thoughts then on it. So towards the end of the year, I wrote, this was a bit more, less on point than some of the other ones, three shirim that I called Tshuva Tztaka, Tshuva Tvila and Tztaka on social media. The most interesting of those, but the one I cannot do in 20 minutes, was Tztaka, which was the question of Chazal outlined the concentric circles of obligation for tzedakah as based on aniyei ircha, right? The poor of your city. One of the key, I think, halachic questions that has to be dealt with in many contexts in the modern era is whether community, whenever halacha talks about community, whether it means that in a geographic sense or an ideological sense. And in tzedakah, this becomes particularly important because people tend to give to institutions they identify with rather than ones in their geographic community, hence the rise of social media-driven campaigns, fundraising campaigns, including our own, and whether that is legitimate, or even if it's legitimate, right, is your obligation to the institution that you identify with, the institution that the people you're friends with identify with, which, again, is the fundraising tactic of such campaigns, but halachically is actually very questionable. I think, in the end, justifiable, right? But it is a question that appears over and over in halacha, but that's a much longer share, and maybe we'll do that later in the year at some point. That was, I think, the most fun, one of the most fun topics that I dealt with. But tshuva is a minier topic, so we'll do that. So tshuva, right? Every form of mass communication, social media included, has allowed people to create more and more, how shall we say?
Problems for themselves.
I mean, that, yes, maybe. But also, Erev Yom Kippur becomes a time of superficial apologies, right? Once it was the, I remember, like, when I was in elementary school, especially, you know, the day before Yom Kippur, are you Michael me? Are you Michael me? Right? Whatever, right? If you were really from, you waited for them to say yes, right? Because you held, like, the positions that needed to be verbalized, right? And not just a nod of the head, right? Which, as it is, sounds a bit superficial. But now it's become mass emails, WhatsApps, Facebook posts, I don't know, right? Stickers on WhatsApp, I don't know. We'll see based on the way the WhatsApp groups are working already in Migdal.
Right. Oh, boy.
Stickers. And the question is as follows, right? Is there any value to that? If so, what is the value to that? And how would you even address that question, right? That's really what I'm interested in methodologically. How would you even address that question? So tell me, how would you address that? What would you do to figure out if there is and what the value would be of such an apology?
You'd have to understand the, I guess, what the purpose of apology is.
Good. First, you have to figure out, right? So let's figure that out. So where does that come from? Right? Why does one have to apologize?
Because you have to...
It's one of the parts of
good, right? As the sugya at the end of Yoma, or at the end of the 8th parak outline, that for a mitzvah bin Adam lamakom, you achieve atonement. That I was going to correct Yaakov. Yaakov kept saying repentance. You achieve atonement, right? Atonement is the result of repentance, right? Atonement, forgiveness, through the four-step process of tshuva, right? And for more stringent sins, you might need punishment, you might need Yom Kippur, death, you know, that stuff.
Hopefully not that one.
Right? But for mitzvot ben adam l'chaveiro, you're not nimchal ad sheyiratzer chaveiro. Until you appease your friend. Right? That is black and white. Right? That's a Mishnah. And then the Gemara outlines several stories of people who offended people. They went and asked Mechila. Right? The Gemara outlines you have to go three times. Right? If they don't forgive you the first time, you right, they're allowed to turn down their... the request for forgiveness twice. By the third time, they should forgive you, at which point you no longer have to seek their forgiveness. If someone's died before you could apologize, you have to go with 10 people to their grave. So that's part of that.
How far do we take that, by the way? Do we say that only for, like, big things, or do we say, like...
It doesn't sound like it, honestly.
It's like, oh, I accidentally, like, I took, like, a dollar bill from your house one time because I wasn't thinking, like, I need to go...
Well, the question of whether that's an avera or just an obligation, right? If I took it by accident, right? Or if I took your dollar by accident, it might just be, I owe you the money, it might not be a sin as well, right? You know, but yeah, presumably if I stole from you and I returned the dollar, right, I'd have to go to the grave and, you know, I mean, you know, we're not asking for a seance, right? You're not asking to bring down the spirit. We're just simply asking, okay, good. So there's that obligation. And now what? We have that text. Good. Great. Now what do we do? How do we figure out whether this works? Now, well, let's divide it practically. There are two results we have to talk about halachically, right? A Facebook apology, naniach, right? One is... Do you want me to pause it? Okay, but let's talk about two pragmatic, right, practical possibilities. What might happen, right? You post an apology on, take your social media, Facebook, okay?
Yeah.
Whatever else you want, I don't care. Instagram, fine?
Sure.
Good for you, right? Right now, what are the two cases we have to analyze?
I don't know who this is, but it's someone.
Okay.
The two cases we have to analyze. What do you mean? Yes. Like someone responds or someone doesn't respond.
Or someone, right? I mean, someone responds, forgives you, and someone doesn't. Now, if someone does not forgive you, what is the conclusion?
Definitely no.
Definitely not. Obviously, just like if I asked them in person, right? Right, I would have to go through three times. We could ask if I posted it three times. Right? Okay, would that count? Fine. Yes, love doing it.
Probably
right?
Not because you have no assurance that people saw it.
Correct. Right. Probably not. But if they don't forgive me, so let's assume that doesn't work. But I'm interested in a different question, which is, let's say they look at it and they say, oh, you know what?
I forgive them.
Now what? Does it work?
Oh, because that verbal? Yeah.
Conceptually, what does it hang on, right? It's
right.
When you think about it, what does it actually hang on?
If it's more than, like, actual forgiveness, then, like, if the guy forgives you, it should be fine.
Uh-huh.
Right, or you might need a mysa.
Oh, good, right? This is a very classic lum de shakira here, right? Which is the purpose of an apology, if we wanted to put it in Lumdish terminology, is it about the maisa, the totsa'a, right? The act or the result, right? Meaning, is it that I need to apologize to people simply to elicit their forgiveness, right? Or, what's the other possibility?
Right, the first one is them doing an action.
Right, or, yeah, or is...
Oh, or they need to actually... Or
you,
they
and why would you need to apologize? Good, why would you need to apologize? What, right?
To get them to forgive you.
That was what we just said, right?
Oh,
if it's not result-oriented.
So for them to tell you they forgive you...
Well, but they could tell. So they posted it. They posted it.
So one of them would be kind of... Just the difference between the two would be, do you need them to forgive you, or do you need to... go away with the knowledge that they forgive you.
No, let's say you went away with the knowledge, right? What? Push it farther,
yeah.
Right? Think about it, right? In the Gemara, right? Are there other sins, right? Sometimes, what do we need? What do you need for atonement? You actually need to go through, certain processes, right? It could be that the act of apologizing, you know how like tshuva requires charata and azivat sachet,
right?
Right?
So maybe one of those.
Well, maybe when it's mitzvah ben chaver, one of those is an apology. Why an apology? Right? Right? If it's not just about eliciting forgiveness, what else might it be? Well, think about it, right? When you apologize, what do you do?
You're acknowledging that you did something wrong.
There's an acknowledgement. There's an act of humbling,
sure.
Right? It's part of what prevents you from doing it again is the fact that you know you have
you
to face the person face
to
face. You don't want to have to, right? You think about it, actually part of the process of change, right, is not just that the person forgives me, was that I humble myself and I ask for forgiveness, right? That's part, when in interpersonal sense, it's actually part of it, right? So I think the first place you have to go here is Well, which, when the Gemara, when the Halacha tells you you need an apology, well, why do you need an apology? Is that a result-oriented statement? Or is that a process-oriented statement?
Yeah.
Right? Now, this is actually a machlokas. Right? The Yerushalmi has a line, Amar Shmuel, right? Shmuel says that one who sins against his friend has to say to him, Sarach Delach, right? I wronged you. Right, I've sinned against you. Right, so if you look in the Yerushalmi, there is a machlokas.
There's nothing about asking forgiveness in that state. There's no.
There's a machlokas. Wait a second. There's a machlokas between the Ein Yaakov, right, who writes his commentary in the Bavli as well, and the Ife Mare, which who's the Ife Mare? Right, he's Rav Shmuel Yaffe Ashkenazi. He's 1600s. He's the rabbi in. He's from Bursa. Shesh v'chetzi, ken? Berach. He moves to Constantinople. Anyways, writes a perush on Midrash Rabbah, Agadat on the Yerushalmi. Then Yaakov writes, "You are not allowed to send a messenger to somebody else to ask forgiveness on your behalf." What you learn from Shmuel is you have to say to him, right, I wronged you. You have to apologize directly, because part of the process of tshuva is the busha, is the embarrassment, is that shame you feel being forced to face the person face to face. And if you send a messenger, you remove the awkwardness, right? Just like for certain sins you need suffering, right? For interpersonal sins, you need the process, the discomfort that comes from an apology. You remove that discomfort, you add an intermediary, you're not Yotze. Right? And the Yifei Mare responds, why? The point of an apology is that he should forgive you. Even if you didn't ask him for forgiveness, but he forgave you, it would be fine.
Right?
And you see two completely different assumptions of what is the point of an apology. Is this a process statement, or is this a result statement? Right? Now, part of our liturgy is clearly on the Feimara side of the equation. Right? Like Tefillat Zakah. Right? Tefillat Zakah, Erev Yom Kippur. You know that thing that maybe you get to davening in time to say it, maybe not?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I guess not.
You know, in your siddur, right before davening, there's that whole tefillah, right? And in it, you say, I don't want anyone to be punished on my behalf, and I hereby forgive them, and I hope they forgive me, and
right? Right? That's the result that I've
correct.
Which we also, it's just the reason that, a lot of people, I've heard just say, oh, I forgive everyone, before
right.
you go into your
and that's the that's
and that's essentially following the Ife Mara-esque thing. Now, on the Ife Mara's cheshbon, right, again, you have a technicality that if you just put a Facebook, apology, you might not know whether they apologize. So now you have to find out,
right?
But assuming they actually forgave you, right, it would be helpful. And even if you don't find out, it's at least a helpful thing to do, because you know what? A bunch of people will probably forgive you, right? And it's, you're not going to be able to get
better than nothing.
Better than nothing, right? That there's something there if you think it's only about the result. But if you think it's about the Ifeimara, one could argue. Now, you could distinguish between different modes, right? You could say, look, an intermediary removes the awkwardness. So it might depend on what form of media, meaning a phone call. There's still some awkwardness, right? A long, detailed, heartfelt email,
right?
Maybe that would work. Maybe yes, maybe no, right? Of a Facebook post, right, which is impersonal, right, or a mass WhatsApp, which is removes the discomfort the same way, if not more, than a messenger does.
Yeah.
Right? Definitely. Would not, because.
But it's possible that it was objectified as Dibor.
Potentially you have to be medaber, right? If you think it could be that it's formal, but he focuses not on the dibor, he focuses on the on the discomfort that's involved.
Can I just ask,
right?
Why would dibor have to be? What would be the idea behind dibor being?
Right, it would be strange. I mean, you could just vidui, right? I mean, look, you could obviously get into interesting questions, dibor, kiksiva, kidibor, and all types of stuff. But his argument, at least, we just take his argument. Now, obviously, you could come at it from that angle. If you came from that angle, sure, then maybe you'd have to get into, is a voice note good, right? Is it, right?
Right,
but But I think, look, his argument is more compelling to me, which is, if there is a problem with impersonal apologies, it's not because it's the lack of dibur, it's because the process, you want to call it busha, like he does, right? Or you want to call it the humbling, right? Which is maybe more direction I would go, right? That the humbling, the actual being forced to actually recognize the consequences of your actions, right, by looking the person eye to eye, whichever aspect of tshuva, right?
Right.
If you think that that's part of it, then that impersonal nature actually affects the halacha. Now there is a middle ground, right, which is taken by many poskim. Mishnah Berurah rules this way. Rav Avadya rules this way. Nichavadat, right? Many poskim rule this way, which is to say, lechatchila in person. Bidiavid, right? Right. Again, whether you're Yotze Bidiavid or you might as well, according to some sheet, or you accomplish something, right? But what are they clearly recognizing? That there is something emotionally, existentially, religiously, however you want to put it, meaningful about the act of the apology that is beyond simply eliciting the forgiveness from the other person, right? And you lose that by taking advantage of the impersonal, for them, impersonal medium of a messenger, right? Or for us, right? All of the modes of communication we use, which allow us to hide behind the veil.
Behind just the WhatsApp screen.
Right. Whatever you want to call it. Right. I don't even mean veil, like, in this case, that they won't know who you are. Right, but you're right. Hide behind...
Right, where you don't actually have to...
Correct, I mean, everything. You know, look, it's the same reason that, like, you know, how many TV shows have... You know, have at least one episode where they deal with the impropriety of breaking up with your girlfriend by text, right? Like, or by text, right? Like, if you're gonna do it, right?
Do it in person.
Do it in person because it's an uncomfortable thing to do if you had a relationship with someone, right? So you owe them an explanation. You owe them going through the process, even if it's uncomfortable, right? Okay. To do it impersonally, to not make it awkward, right? To text them and then block them on your phone, right? Right, we recognize that that is actually not how you deal with relationships, right? Now, does that mean there's no value at all? Right. In the world of the Inyako. So you could either take a Mishnah Berurah approach, well, maybe there is at the lower level, but not at the higher level, right? But there is another interesting aspect that I think is part of the conversation, which is, there's really two questions we have to ask. One is, from the perspective of tshuva. Second is from the perspective of Yom Kippur. Right? So, if I asked you, why do you apologize Erev Yom Kippur? What would you think?
Because you're atoned.
Because, you know, Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin. This is the end of the Din process, right? So we're apologizing, because of course we're apologizing. We're going through Din, right? And we want to cleanse ourselves of all our sins. And Yom Kippur works for Mitzvah Ben Adam LaMakom. It doesn't work for Mitzvah Ben Adam LaChaveiro, right? Again, exactly how that works, right? There, you know, very briefly, there is a Machlokes, that the Ein Yaakov picks up on the Mashal in the Mishnah, that the tshuva is like a mikvah, and argues that according to one day in the Mishnah, one gets no kapara for any sin until he's gotten forgiveness from all minan l'chaveiro. And some poskim actually rule that way. Rav Avadya notes that even the Ein Yaakov only thinks that's one day in the Mishnah, not the one we paskin like. But he does note that there are certain poskim, like the Pri Chadash, who say that may be true, but you can't get, right? Maybe you do get forgiveness for your mitzvah ben makom, even without getting forgiveness for all your mitzvah ben l'chaveiro, but you can't get forgiveness for the mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, the mitzvah ben adam l'makom component of interpersonal sins without getting forgiveness, right? Meaning every interpersonal sin is also mitzvah ben l'makom. You need to first get forgiveness from your friend, and then God will do his part. But it's not like you can cleanse, right? So that's like the Pri Chadash's argument. So, but the simple read is that all that analysis is relevant here because you cannot get forgiveness without asking your friend in Erev Yom Kippur. You want atonement in Yom Kippur, so you got to go through this process, right? But there's actually another strain. Going back to Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, which is quoted by the Rishonim, quoted by the Rosh Arua, it's quoted by many Chachmei Ashkenaz, quoted by many Poskim, Rav Avadya quotes it, La Halacha, right? Keeps going, which is that actually, the reason we ask for forgiveness in our Yom Kippur is not because of that. It's
humble yourself.
You would think, right? So they actually, Pirkei Avos has a very interesting claim. On Yom Kippur, part of the nature of the day is that we try to be angel-like, right? And Pirkei Avos has this shocking statement, which is, Mama, okay, Shoreis, Einam Ochlin, Venin Shosin, Afanan, Oyan Ochlin, Shosin, right? Blah, 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 blah. Ma malachei hashoreis shalom b'neihem af anachnu shalom b'neihem. And based on this, the Ur Zeruah argues that the reason that we apologize in Erev Yom Kippur, I have no idea, right? But that there's shalom in b'marom, I don't know what that means. Go ask the angels, I don't know, right? But the Ur Zeruah argues, I don't know. But the Pirkei Avos argues that the reason we apologize every Yom Kippur is not, I would put in brackets, just because we want atonement, but because it's part of getting into that angelic mode. Right? Now, if we take it from that vantage point, right, you actually have a different possibility, which is maybe it doesn't get you atonement. But think back to your experience every Yom Kippur. Right? Is it not true that even those superficial apologies that people run around doing, do you forgive me, are you mochel me, even if they don't really mean it, and even if they don't delineate their sins, which they should, right?
I was going to say,
is it not the case that by the time you get into Shul Yom Kippur, there is that feeling in the air, which apparently, according to Pirkei Avos, is part of right, what is necessary, that people are in a forgiving mood, are pachot yoter, right, they're willing, right, they're not thinking about it too deeply, right? Maybe if you actually brought up the sin that you did, they might have to think about it. But there is a level at which even our superficial apologies do create an atmosphere of a forgiving atmosphere, a peaceful, right, a camaraderie. And even if it doesn't accomplish atonement, right, there's apparently the second element of Yom Kippur, where part of the reason that we forgive people is to create shalom, right? And that's part of Yom Kippur, right? Now, from that vantage point, it's interesting. Right? This is like my limud zchus on it, right? Is that even if it doesn't work legamre from the atonement perspective,
right? Which is a machlokas.
Right? The reason that we apologize for Yom Kippur, apparently according to the Shitot, is not only because we need atonement, but because we want to go through the act of apologizing. Right? We want to go through the act of apologizing. And you, by the way, you find this, right? Like things like sins that you did in the past year, you do tshuva again in Yom Kippur, even if you were atoned. Right? Meaning, part of Yom Kippur isn't just achieving atonement of things you actually need atonement for. It's creating an atmosphere. Beinam b'mamakom, beinam l'chaveru, of contrition. Right? Now, part of that is simply, yeah, you get in the mode, right? You apologize even for sins that you have been forgiven for. Right? But you bring them up because it's Yom Kippur, right? That's the atmosphere, right? From this vantage point, I think that there is at least potentially a secondary value, right? Assuming you, let's say you pass them like Dan Yaakov, right? Or you pass them the Fei Mare and people don't forgive you. They didn't see the post. But still, the fact that everybody, like those days leading up to Yom Kippur, everyone is, are you mochel me? I hope people that I haven't seen in a long time, I hope I haven't done anything, but if I did, I hope you forgive me, right? We're all human, right?
Well, at the same time, when I see that from someone that I saw like literally yesterday and they didn't want to go with me then, but they're doing it, willing to do it now over this, that like just makes me more annoyed sometimes.
That's definitely true sometimes. And again, I think that for things you really need kabbara for, right? I think this hangs in Yaakov Feimara, and even according to Feimara, if you don't forgive them, it's not going to work. Right? I mean, that's not up for discussion, right? But what's interesting is I think, right, there are the, let's say, let's be nice here, right? There's the 25% of sins, right, that are like, you actually need atonement for. And then there's a lot of things like, people, I didn't really wrong you. And if I did, it was really minor.
Like,
and just like,
oh, I closed the door when you were trying to go through.
Look, I was overtired one morning. I didn't say, you know, I was a bit grumpy when I said good morning. It made you feel bad for a second. Like, things like that, that like, they're not right, but like, we're willing to paper over, right? And, you know, that's what friends do.
It's not right, but at the same time, like, I wouldn't fault you for it because I would do it also.
Correct.
I also
that's,
don't remember any of it.
Correct. And like, that type of thing, like a generic apology, really That's really all you want, right? Is that every so often, like your friends say, look, I know there are a lot of things we do that are, you know, less than perfect. Like, I do them, you do them, you know. Let's move on.
That's part of like.
Right, it's part of life. But
part of the key part of friendship.
Correct, but the Or Zoroa argues that that's actually part of Erev Yom Kippur. That part of Erev Yom Kippur is, you know, like we have these like resets in our friendship every so often, right? Where we try to just, you know, clear the air, move on, right? Not for like big things, but like just the little things that build up that we do that are lo na'im, right? The Or Zoroa building on this piece in Lazar is arguing that Erev Yom Kippur is when you're supposed to do that. Because that atmosphere of, okay, we have peace, right, Zragua, is actually part of the chiyuv of Yom Kippur.
Right?
So, Zev knows my methodology a little bit more, right? But just to sort of highlight this, right, that this is a question, right, you know, and Zev knows this, that when I was writing about social media, right, people said, oh, you're writing about Lashon Hara and privacy, right? Those are obviously the areas of halacha that are affected the most by social media, mass communication. But that type of thing, I think, mostly changed things quantitatively. Like, now I can say Lashon Hara to more people. Right? Right? Whatever. Like, but...
But
if you want to think about the ways in which halacha looks different in our life, you need to ask in a real sense, like, in what ways have the ways we experience life changed, and where is that going to reflect itself in halacha? So, like, tshuva is not a place that you think about right away, right? But it actually is, because tshuva, definitely interpersonal tshuva, is a reflection of relationships, right?
And relationships have changed,
and the way we communicate has changed, and therefore tshuva, which part of it is about communication relationship, has to, in some way, flow in, right? Has to have an expression there. Right? And I think it's a small little area, right? But I think it's actually a nice way of highlighting, right, the types of ways we don't even realize, right, that our life has changed. That, on the one hand, communication becomes so easy that we've gotten used to impersonal communication, but the Ein Yaakov Yufeimara Machlokes highlights the fact that, well, that may not be enough, right? Because if it's just about achieving a goal, so sure, if they end up forgiving me, great, right? But if you think that part of tshuva is the process of humbling yourself, sometimes we forget how much, right, again, back to the TV example, right, of breaking up by text, right, how much we take advantage of all modes of communication to take the hard parts of human relationships out of human relationships, right? And that reflects itself maybe in pop culture, right, on these, you know, sort of comical scenes, or not comical, depending on if it's a drama or a comedy, right, and a TV show. But in halacha, right, it reflects itself in tshuva, right? I mean, if you think that tshuva needs that interpersonal element, right, then it's not there. You're using something to remove what's supposed to be uncomfortable, right? You're supposed to feel that. Again, if it's busha, according to him, or what I would argue more like humbling, right? Still, we have to remember that we've actually done that, and that has implications in areas that we don't normally think about, right? Now, on the other hand, the Or Zoroa-esque Pirkei Lazar thing also reminds us that social media gives us the ability, maybe not for increased deep relationships, but it does allow us more quickly to create atmospheres, right? Which also may have halachic implications. Now, l'tov or l'ra. In this case, it's l'tov. Right? But obviously it has the implications l'ra, right? A single post which is, right, which is cynical, which is harmful, which is whatever, right?
Can instantly change a discussion.
Correct. Or, you know, or, right, or discussions like how much should I be posting, right? Even what we talk about, like, avak lashon hara, right, in halacha, right? Where, like, I shouldn't praise someone too much because his enemies might want to, right,
put him down,
right? When you think about it, you do that on Facebook, right? You do not know, someone's going to see it, right? I mean, even little things like that, right? To remember their implications that flow over, even just, I create a mood, right? And that has implications, right? Again, Lashon Hara, easy to think about how that might happen. Tshuva? But it clearly does, right? The Or Zoroa is saying, even in his time, right, those, right, apologizing was part of creating atmosphere, which social media allows us to do in a very interesting way, right? Meaning, all those posts to Erev Yom Kippur really do, at least me, right, make it feel like, you know, you feel like you're a community, part of a community, a broad community that is trying to improve, right? So those are my like 2 cents on let's say tshuva in the age of social media. Tefillah was the one I really stretched at. I do it thinking it has certain implications. I guess he's not here, but I'll say it very quickly then. Tefillah, I don't think it has so many, but I would say two halachic-ish questions that I think about with it are, one is that many poskim talk about, Shlomo Zalman is a very nice piece on this, talk about, is he starting, or is that them talking about the food? No, it's the food, right? Tefillah, when you daven for somebody else, many of the poskim talk about the fact that what legitimates that is the fact that I really care about them, and therefore, for at some level, it's personal. Right, because tefillah is fundamentally personal. And therefore, Shlomo Zalman talks about this, that if someone would ask him to daven for someone else, and then they wouldn't tell him that the person got better, he quotes Maharal Diskin, he would yell at him. Because it's like, I was crying for this person every day, right? And then you had the chutzpah not to tell me he was better, right? But what that highlights is that tefillah is really supposed to be personal. Often, this isn't just about social media, but it's gotten worse, right? And here, I don't want people to misunderstand me, right? I'm not saying, right, you shouldn't daven for people you don't know. Right? That's not what I'm saying, right? Let me be careful. What I'm saying is that what emerges from many poskim is that the obligation, that if you are going to daven for someone, you have an obligation to actually get yourself to care about them, right? Because tshuva has to, because tefillah has to mean something, right? And therefore, if you actually are capable of caring about every person in the world, that's great. But at some level, will we cheapen tefillah if, you know, 100 people a day post daven for this person, this person, this person, and we don't even try to put a face to the name, and we just like add it to our mishaberach list, but we don't actually think about the fact that I'm supposed to care, right? We cheapen what tefillah means, right? And that's just something to think about, right? I think we can develop that. Another part of it is what the Chassam Sofer talks about a lot, which is that when you daven for someone, it's better to daven in person because then you don't have to use their name, right? Which sort of mystically in the Gemara, there's indications that when you daven for someone without using their name, that's better because it doesn't invoke din against them. And when you're in person, you can daven for someone directly without using their name. When you're not there, right, it's a less perfect tefillah because you have to use their name. Which is another halachic concern that you at least have to think about, right? Whether how seriously you take that from Sofer is an interesting question, right? But again, my point is simply that, like, there are little things that you don't even think about, right? We've become so used to the fact that, oh, someone posts a name, I'll add it to my tefillah, which is a good thing. But we forget that really, really, really what's behind that is that I'm supposed to care. And even if it's second-degree caring, I care about that person, and I know they're in pain because their relative is sick, right? Even if I could get there, right? But davening for someone is supposed to be accepting to daven someone is supposed to accept on yourself an obligation to care about that person, right? But we're so used to mass media and it, you know, that like, it doesn't even cross our mind. Like, we just think like, yeah, tefillah, like, hey, add someone to your name. But you don't think like, no, that means I have to care about them, right? Those are like two questions I would bring up in tefillah. And like I said, the major question, this deserves really a long share if we do this at some point, is the tzedakah one, right? The tzedakah, right? To use our three, right, Elul themes.
Next week.
What?
Next week, Tuesday night?
Well, I don't know if next week is going to be me, but at some point we'll do it. But this one, I think, that one is, by the way, is the one I think, like I said, halachically is the most interesting, right? And this, as I've mentioned before in different contexts, that the fundamental question there, which is, does halacha view community geographically or ideologically, has manifestations in a lot of areas. It's not just staka. Minog, Mardasra, right? Like, there's like 100 different areas. Right, the notion of rabbinic authority, right, which in the time of the Gemara is Mara D'Atra, right. the master of the place,
right?
Halachic authority was geocentric, right? Not world centric, geographic centric, right? Geographic centric.
Authority was you were in that town, there was no other rabbi. In
correct.
That town.
Can you replace, rabbi, right? Can you replace geography with identity, right? With ideology, right? That question, and you know, again, as one of my charusas put it, my methodology in this series was the opposite of what is in vogue today, right? In vogue today is mina mekarot ad lahalacha lemaaseh, right? This is sort of the opposite, is, right, meha maaseh, right? Think about sort of the practical questions and realize how the practical questions, right, like connect to conceptual questions, right, in Right? You start with figuring out in what ways has this affected our life, and then looking at very varied areas of halacha where that actually spilled over into, right? And, you know, it's sort of a chakira in life, right? And then chakira in life with nafkaminas and lumdas, right? Right?
I was going to say...
Which is sort of the opposite of... Right? But that may be a fair description of my methodology sometimes.
If you ever actually turn this into a book, I'd probably honestly get it.
I mean, look, the series is up online. Whether I turn it into a book, question of whether I feel like going... Maybe eventually... I was thinking about doing it over the summer, but realistically... You need a few. No, you need a few months after you wrote something to look at it with fresh eyes, to edit it. Right? You don't want to. As soon as you finish it, like, you know, you spend a year on it, and now I have to go back to the emails of people who listened to the shiurim, who read the shiurim and gave me feedback, right? And then integrate them into the pieces that they wrote to me about. Right? I mean, I need to. Certain things I'm happy with. Certain things I disagree with. Certain things have to be expanded. Certain things have to right, be rethought. Right? Like, look, material's there. It's not like, you know, it's a Baruch Hashem. Anyways, those are some contemporary halacha / Elul thoughts. At least this.